Tony Allen joins us, though, for a look at the week in rural news. And Tony, a horror end to the week for dairy producers.
Yes, there was a big slide in the dairy markets, the world dairy markets this week. The global dairy trade, which is a bi-monthly auction of dairy, fell by over 10% in a night, and it's the ninth time in a row that dairy market has fallen. And some indicators of dairy prices around the world show things are at their lowest, in fact, even lower than during the global financial crisis. And analyst Susan Kilsby from AgriHQ in New Zealand says this price drop is going to affect Australian farmers.
The opening prices of, you know, Murray Goulburn and Warrnambool were quite strong, really, at, you know, around that 560 level. And I don't think they would have been expecting, you know, global commodity prices to come back by as much as they have or as quickly as they have done when making those forecasts. So it is likely that it will have an impact at the farm gate.
One of the other big stories this week was the ongoing seesaw, I guess you could say, between the cattle that Indonesia wants and the quotas that it hands out.
Yes, well, the Indonesian government shocked the cattle industry by saying it was going to issue only 50,000 import permits this quarter, that is the next 3 months, for Australia to send live cattle to Indonesia. Now, the Australians were expecting about 200,000 import permits. Therefore, they've got a lot of cattle they don't know what to do with. And the Federal Trade Minister, Andrew Robb, says it's internal disagreements in Indonesia that are causing the problem. He says the federal government is working to sign trade deals that will open up new live cattle markets, apart from Indonesia. But in the meantime, there's not much else the Australian government can do.
Well, as I've been advised, and I'm in daily contact the last week or so, the issues are very much internal. There's a desire there by the government to be self-sufficient in lots of things. Now, there's a lot of disagreement within the country about whether that's possible or not. It's not something we can stick our nose into. It's disagreements between senior people in Indonesia itself.
But the news may not be quite as bad as it sounds, because Indonesia's trade minister has indicated some extra permits could be issued to import cattle from Australia.
And that's happened in the past.
That's happened in the past, but perhaps even up to 200,000, which Australia wants. The Indonesian Consul General in Darwin, Andre Siregar, had some soothing messages for the Australian cattle industry.
50,000 is a very unexpected number, and the people of Indonesia will continue to demand beef. So the way I see it is, right now, it's just a managerial thing. I'm hopeful that we can find some way that would help you in the coming 3 months.
Still on live exports, and Vietnam is one of those markets where we've had numerous animal welfare issues over the last few months and earlier than that. Companies are kind of taking that on the front foot.
Yeah, cattle cam is coming. The agribusiness elders is going to switch on a vast network of closed TV cameras and scanners in abattoirs and feedlots right across Vietnam. The company aims to ship 50,000 cattle to Vietnam this year. Elders Cameron Hall says this 24/7 live feed of all abattoirs and feedlots, that'll be a ratings winner, but it's likely to be the future approach to all new live export markets.
Instantaneously, if there is an issue, we're made aware of it, we can act. We have quite a large group of staff based in Vietnam that we can act straight away and address the situation.
And of course, ahead around all of these stories is swarming some pretty amazing prices.
Yes, Meat and Livestock Australia projections put beef and veal exports from Australia up 11% on a year ago. There are very good prices for beef and lamb at the moment. Although some cattle producers say don't get too excited, in real terms, they're not much better than they were 30 years ago when inflation is taken into account, and it may be just temporary and they might fall again. But Simon Broad from Berengarra Station in Western Australia is one of those farmers who's very happy. He says his cattle were nearly dying from drought a few months ago. Now they've got calves at foot, and he's already exceeded his average annual rainfall.
It's a bit like childbirth. It hurts like hell when you're having the droughts, but when it rains, it's fantastic. It's really good. Couldn't be much better, to be honest.
And at the Wagga Wagga sale yards in New South Wales, the scene was pretty similar this week, though beef agent Tim McKean says everyone was jubilant.
They're excited, and so they should be. You know, we haven't seen these prices ever. So, I've never seen in my lifetime, my father or any of my family, we've always been on the land, and You know, we've never seen this, and being an agent for the last 20-odd years, it's something that we've been always talking about but we've never seen, and pretty exciting times.
I've got to say, it's refreshing to hear some real people talking in some of these stories. How are butchers feeling about all of this?
Well, the butchers are putting their prices up. We spoke to one in Melbourne, Peter Boucher. He says the wholesale prices he pays for beef and lamb have risen 50% in less than a year. He's had to pass it on to his consumers, and he's starting to worry that consumers are just going to be put off red meat. He says he's a bit worried that shoppers may steer towards pork and chicken.
I can see it happening. You can only pass it on for so long too, and then, you know, if you can't pass it on, you're not making money out, you decide not to push it as hard. You know, and you'll look to sell something else, which, you know, we don't want to do because we love selling beef, we love selling lamb, you know, we're butchers, that's what we love.
Away from meat news now, and a significant announcement late in the week by the federal government about a war on feral cats.
The government announced a threatened species campaign this week with $6.6 million worth of funding. They aim to fund 20 mammals, 20 birds and 30 plants to help them survive. These are particularly threatened species. Some of them include the plains wanderer, the orange-bellied parrot, the numbat, the golden bandicoot. And one of the creatures that's causing some of these mammals and birds to disappear is the feral cat. And the Threatened Species Commissioner, Gregory Andrews, says there will be money in this package for a war on feral cats and eradication program.
Today, Minister Hunt is declaring war on feral cats, and he's asked me to take charge of that program.
The oyster industry is trying to tackle fluctuating water, I guess, especially when there's floods and heavy rain.
Yes, it's an ongoing story. You get some storms and you hear from the oyster industry they can't harvest, or their oysters have become polluted. They lose a lot of money and the consumer loses a lot of oysters. So there is research underway at the National Marine Science Centre at Coffs Harbour in New South Wales to see if you could partially grow oysters on land, in water tanks, of course. The estuaries and lakes often close to oyster harvesting for weeks on end because of that heavy rain or the pollution. So Ken Cowden from the National Marine Science Centre says the oysters could still grow in these waterways but be put in tanks on dry land 3 weeks before market.
Foremost in the research that's needed is developing a diet that's cost effective and will maintain the oysters in peak condition and not impart any adverse flavours or anything of that nature.
And speaking of seafood, the demand for our salmon is growing in Japan.
Human aquaculture in Tasmania is a big salmon producer, farm salmon producer. It's expanded its processing, and that's excited the largest Japanese buyer of salmon, a company called Blue Link. It buys 1,000 tonnes of salmon from the Tasmanian company each year. The chief executive, Nobu Kamiya, was there this week, and he said they were going to look to get more salmon even from Tasmania because salmon was very, very popular in sushi restaurants.
Our company is really set up and based to actually heavily market the Tasmanian or the Huon brand. Our sushi consumption of salmon has been increasing every year since the Japanese started importing fresh salmon into Japan. And I think we'll definitely be able to see many, many more value-added products out of this facility in Parramatta Creek into Japan.
And perhaps with your salmon you'd like to have some pureed potato, or maybe not.
There's always a market to serve the lazy consumer.
Yes.
You know, like you can get leaves, salad leaves removed from the lettuce.
Yes.
And you can get pumpkin already chopped up and all this sort of stuff.
Soup packets, yes, yeah. What's next?
But the latest thing is potatoes. The South Australian potato industry is developing, with research from the University of South Australia, a pureed product that it hopes is going to win back some of these lazy consumers who've moved to pasta or rice, because, of course, all you have to do with them is you just throw them in a saucepan. You don't have to go through the arduous process of actually peeling them.
Yes.
Well,
yep.
So the main goal is to use up the potatoes that have been rejected by retailers. This is not up to scratch, and that's usually about 20 to 30% of a farmer's crop. Now, this means, according to Potatoes SA, that farmers could get an extra $26 million a year by using those previously unused potatoes. But Dr. John Carriger from the University of South Australia says it could also reverse the global decline in potato consumption by turning spuds into this product that will compete with other convenient meal options?
The disadvantages of selling potatoes in the marketplace in terms of, you know, they have a finite shelf life, you have to carry home a bag of them, you often have to peel them, cook them. Compare that to the convenience of going to the shelf and just pouring out some rice and dropping it into boiling water.
Oh, what's happening to the world, honestly? The postie is something of a familiar sign for anyone living in a rural and regional town, and it's an end of an era for one of them.
Yes, post offices have been struggling in country towns, partly because people don't send as much snail mail as they used to, and, you know, just the trade in letters has dwindled. And Shirley Little has been the post mistress in Tarpina, a small town in southeastern South Australia, for 40 years. She's a great-grandmother but still rides around on the motor scooter delivering mail, and she's been searching for someone to take over. Well, finally, she's managed to retire. She's found a new owner to keep the post office going for the 350 residents of Tarpina, and she says it gives hopes to other country towns who were worried that it wasn't viable to run their post offices.
We've been trying for about 3 years to sell the post office, but with the help of people within the post office system and getting more money for small post offices, hopefully this will be the start of people thinking with confidence, I can buy a post office because I can make some money out of it.
I particularly loved her comments about refusing to go electronic, Tony.
Yes, well...
No scanning of bills there.
No, well, she's made a great living from it, and I'm sure she'll be around the town and drop in for a natter at the post office with the new owners.
I'm sure she will. Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.
You can hear that full interview. It's a beautiful story on our website and all those other news features, abc.net.au/rural.